submitted for the approval of the Midnight Society. I call this story The Tale of Hey, Do You Remember? Are You Afraid of the Dark? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember?, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Are You Afraid of the Dark? I think this is going to be a lot of fun because not only is this the first installment in our run of Halloween-themed episodes, but this is also the first TV series that we've done for the show. Now, obviously, this is going to be a little different from when we discuss a movie, so here's how it's going to work. We're going to be talking about four episodes. We each picked one that really stuck out in our minds, and we're going to take turns telling you why, and then we're going to close things out with the one episode that we just had to talk about. You probably already know which one it is. If Are You Afraid of the Dark were a rock concert, it would be the big encore. So before we get into all of that, let's take a moment to share our memories of the show in general, how we were introduced to it, what we thought of it, all that good stuff. Donna, what do you remember about Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Well, I remember being mother-loving terrified of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Thank you for keeping it PG.
I mean, we're talking about Snick after all. I was, you know, my friends and I were super excited with the Snick edition to our lives and watched it all the time because Family Matters eventually got old, am I right? So watching Snick, loved it. And every single time Are You Afraid of the Dark would come on and I would make it through about 10 minutes and be so terrified I had to stop. I was sort of a scaredy cat as a kid, not sort of, like absolutely, absolutely terrified of just everything as a child. So most of these episodes, I really only saw probably the opening scene, maybe a little bit more. And once in a while I would watch with a friend and they'd be like, come on, you have to watch. And I would, and I would be pretty scared, but trying to keep up. I know, I can't believe it, watching it now. But I was legitimately terrified of this show.
Okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. Carlos, what about you?
I just remember it being the end of Snick. It would be at the end of the night, and it'd be mm-hmm. nice and dark out, and all the lights off, so you could watch Are You Afraid of the Dark? And yeah. I was never like scared of an episode, but I would definitely keep myself occupied. Like maybe I was drawing or something like that on the side so that I wasn't like, maybe not totally invested in an episode so that it couldn't haunt my dreams, which were going to happen immediately after I watched Are You Afraid of the Dark? So that's all I can really remember.
So I think this show started airing in Canada first, like around 1990, and then it started here in 92. And I guess I probably discovered it right around that time. My sister was actually introduced to Snick at a sleepover one weekend, and she came home and was like, how have we never heard of this? And it was very much like, there is a Snick-shaped hole in your heart, and you don't even know it, sir. And so she's explaining all this to me, you know, the orange couch and the lineup of shows, and I don't remember if I'd heard of them before or not. I do know that Are You Afraid of the Dark was completely new to me. That one was for sure. And the way my sister described it was, oh, they show you monsters and stuff. And in my mind, I took that so literally that the way I envisioned this was like it was a giant cartoon slot machine and somebody pulls the lever and then you get like a row of like, oh, it's Dracula, Dracula, Wolfman. And then you pull the lever again and on and on.
What?
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but I'm going to be honest with you. I would have watched that show. So anyway, the next Saturday, Erica and I were in front of the TV. I'm about to get my Snick cherry busted. And this was the original lineup. So it was Clarissa Explains It All, Roundhouse, Ren and Stimpy, and Are You Afraid of the Dark? So I'm laughing and enjoying the first three shows, but really I'm just thinking about this last one. Everything else is just a warm up for that main course. And the first episode I saw is the one I'm going to be talking about tonight. And for now, I'll just say I was very lucky. It was the perfect introduction. And even as a kid, like, I mean, I don't know. I always loved it and I was always excited to watch it, but it was really rare that an episode actually creeped me out. But it was like being an addict because I got that first taste and it was so good that I kept showing up trying to duplicate that first time. The whole time I'm just thinking like, please be a good one. Please be a good one. Please be a good one. And you'd usually know by the first commercial break which side of the fence it was going to fall on, unless you were Donna, and then that's your cue to get the fuck out of there. You were gone. So, oh, I also want to point out really quick that when I think of this show, I think of the first five seasons because there was this 3-year hiatus and then they came back with a new Midnight Society led by Tucker. And I never saw any of those. I'd outgrown the show by that point. And actually, when we were looking over the episode list, trying to figure out which ones we were going to talk about, I was realizing that I'm pretty hazy on most of like seasons 4 and 5 too. And not a lot of those were jumping out at me. So as a kid, I thought most episodes were entertaining, but not very scary. A few were legitimately frightening, and there were a handful that were eye-rollingly stupid. Do you guys remember the one about the aliens living on the top floor of the apartment building?
No.
But they were just people. They just looked like people, and they were building, like, toys. It was so stupid.
That's... No.
We should have done that one. Volume 2, next Halloween. That one's, we'll do that one. So,
I give you the tale of those darn neighbors.
Oh, God. But I loved it. I really, truly did. And I still love the idea of a scary anthology series for kids because your suspension of disbelief is so powerful when you're young. And that's so special. And I think of the nights where after the show ended, I'd run upstairs, take a flying leap onto my bed so anything hiding underneath it couldn't grab my ankles, and then, you know, pulling the covers up over my head because suddenly I was very aware of everything that might be hiding in the shadows. And, you know, I guess, like, I don't know, some variation of those fears still exist, but now they're not so fun or fanciful. Now it's, I live in a big city and I'm pretty sure those sounds I just heard were not fireworks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was definitely a favorite of mine. And I was really excited to take another look at it. And with that said, we just watched Are You Afraid of the Dark with fresh eyes, so let's see how it holds up. So we're going to start things off with my selection for tonight's lineup. I still think this has to be one of the strongest episodes of the entire series, and it comes from the first season, which I think tends to be a little bit darker and edgier than the subsequent seasons.
Absolutely. No, I thought that they were way less afraid to kill people off in the first season.
Right. I mean, just the ending of this episode, which I don't want to spoil right off the bat, but like they would never end a story like that later on in the show's run.
No.
But yeah, so when I was thinking of like, you know, all the ones I remember as being the scariest, it's crazy how almost all of them are from that first year. And as I just mentioned, this also happens to be the very first one I saw. So, submitted for the nostalgia of the Hindsight Society, I picked The Tale of the Dark Music. So Eric is the narrator of this story. I didn't even remember him. Do you guys have a favorite member of the Midnight Society? Or did you when you were kids?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, whoa. Okay, then.
Well, tell us.
I just thought it was a yes or no.
Lost in your thoughts. Oh, boy. A little cartoon cloud comes up over Donna's head.
Oh, that's amazing.
Gary surrounded by hearts.
That's it. I loved Gary.
Yeah. Okay.
I loved him. Oh, my God. He's so dreamy.
Did you have a favorite member, Carlos?
Gary.
Isn't that crazy? Because I was going to say that I think Gary's always the first one that comes to mind.
Well, Gary's kind of the heart of the show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So dreamy.
Sure, I would say so. I mean, I always thought that the wraparound segments were a little lame. Like, I really like the idea of the Midnight Society, and I like this as a storytelling device. I just don't think any of them ever really made that much of an impression on me. Not the way, yeah, I certainly didn't get all worked up in a tizzy like Donna did, but I'm jealous. That's great. You know what I had totally forgotten, though, is that in my mind, they just bookended the show. But I was really surprised how often they actually interjected during the story.
Yeah, I forgot about that, too.
That's the only thing that kept me watching.
Oh, well, I'll lay your cards out on the table right now, Donna.
Donna, this show came around at a very special time for you, didn't it?
Apparently.
Yeah, I was like 10, 11. Gary, come on.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. When they throw the salt on the fire, that's like Donna's loins. I immediately regret that. That's coming out.
Donna, salty loins, Ray. Oh,
I said God. It and then I made an ooh face. Like, oh. Yeah, nope. Okay, so anyway.
Moving on.
Eric introduces the tale of the dark music, and we meet our main character, Andy Carr. And so his deal is that his parents are divorced. Him and his little sister live with their mom. She's had a run of bad luck. But things look like they're finally starting to go their way because she inherits a house from – it's her uncle, right? Not his uncle. Not like her brother. It's an uncle she never knew.
It's her uncle.
Yeah, her uncle.
Right, because otherwise it'd be a brother she never knew, which would have been ridiculous. So an uncle she never knew, she inherits a house from. So dun, dun, dun. So immediately, here's something that makes Are You Afraid of the Dark a little different from – some of the other stuff we've looked at. Most of the movies we've watched have been designed to work on several levels. Like, kids can enjoy it. Hopefully parents will enjoy it. And this was during a time when, okay, well, I just think if anyone listening is interested in rewatching it, just prepare yourself for the fact that the seams are going to start showing immediately, because this is strictly for kids, which is totally fine, but it's also a 22-minute show that tells a brand new story every week, so it relies a lot on shorthand and characters and stereotypes because it really has no choice but to stay pretty broad. So that's something I figured out I was going to have to make peace with pretty quick. Right away, in fact, because Andy's riding his bike delivering papers, and all of a sudden he meets the neighborhood bully, who's also his neighbor, and you know he's the bully because there's a solo guitar riff every time he steps on screen.
My notes for the bully just say, bully kid is amazing. I punctuated the syllables of amazing.
It's a pretty incredible reveal. And he just hates Andy right away. It's just a bunch of like typical bully nonsense. Stay out of my way. I'm gonna make your life hell. I'm gonna sneak into your bedroom and put my dick in your ear.
And, this is made for kids, right?
Hold on. But you know what? You know what I like is that there were at least a few listeners just now who for a split second were like, whoa, really?
I don't remember
a
that.
A lot darker than I remember it. But no.
Adult themed.
No late night pokey pokey in the ear hole. So yeah, this kid's bad news. So later that night, Andy's hanging out with his mom and his sister, and mom sends him to the basement to look for some tools to help with repairs she's doing.
No, wait. So right, I was going to say, right as she sends him downstairs, she's like, oh, your uncle was so strange and scary, and he died right at the bottom of the stairs. Go downstairs!
I thought she says they found the... I thought that was like the next time they talk about the uncle that she goes, and they found him. Oh, never mind.
Oh, my God.
Or is it this scene? Because if it's this scene, that is bonkers.
No, it's the next time they talk about it, but it's still like,
okay.
It's actually worse because at this point, the mother knows that the son hates it down there.
That he's terrified.
Yeah.
So Andy goes down into the basement, finds this old timey radio, plugs it in. And once the music starts, this old wooden door in the corner of the basement starts to open. And my favorite part of this was Andy's back is to that door, but he hears things moving around. And so at one point he goes, I heard that, as if whatever's back there is just going to be like, oh shit, you got me. Fair enough. Touche. Carry on. No. So Andy turns around and there are just these red eyes in the darkness. And that I actually thought was still pretty creepy, right?
That was totally scary.
And that voice, they're just like, hello, Andy.
I had to get a pillow. I was nervous.
So Andy freaks out, and his dumb dummy pants mother has had too much wine, I guess, because she's all smiley and blasé and keeps insisting it was just a rat. Like, oh, of course, one of those talking rats that knows my G-damn name, you Daffy Lush. Like, I don't know what's going on here. The mom plays this scene like she's a little tipsy or just smoked a joint and is like, ugh, it's probably just a rat. I'm going to teach you how to French kiss.
Oh!
I mean, I'm pretty stunned by the lack of concern from parents and a lot of stuff that we've watched. But I guess I'll give this one a pass because I was thinking, like, I'm sure I cried to my parents about total nonsense all the time when I was little. I remember I went through a phase where I was obsessed with alien abductions, and I read this book where the guy said aliens smelled like cardboard. And so one morning I woke up and I refused to go downstairs because the hallway smelled like cardboard. And so as a parent, what do you do except just go like, well, I guess Chris is skipping breakfast because there are aliens downstairs. So eventually mom says, okay, it was just the radio. And that makes the most sense. And they should have just led with that, but it still called him by name, whatever. So mom looks behind the old wooden door and discovers the root cellar. And I'd never heard of such a thing. And I wound up searching my basement to make sure that we didn't have one. But what we did have was we had a crawl space down there. And in the very back of it, there was this little metal door. And that fucked me up right proper. Like, I thought of this episode every time I looked at that thing. God. Even as a grown man, my parents just moved out of that house a few months ago. And the last time I was there going through that crawl space, I was like, oh, yeah, well, behind that door is the skeleton who gives me presents. So I honestly didn't plan on going through this episode scene by scene, but it's so short and they're all filled with so much gold because this next part was probably my favorite scene as an adult. It was where we see the bully being yelled at by his comically trashy father.
Oh my God.
It looks like a fatter Randy Quaid wearing a pageboy wig and Zubaz pants. And he's like, wash these steps and you're terrible. I'm going to make you eat my shit. And here's my theory. Here's my theory on how this happened. This was made in Canada. And since there aren't any mean people in Canada, I think they're just sort of guessing what a white trash father looks and sounds like. And you know, okay, so I wasn't sure if I was going to do this or not, but now I think we have to. Let's take a really quick stroll down Chris's fashion corner. You know what's great is new listeners are going to think, oh, I get it. The fashion show theme is all weird and nightmarish because it's a Halloween episode. Nope. That's how it always ends. Like, okay, so let's start with Dad. What happened here? It comes time to shoot this scene and you're like, well, we can't just dress him like a normal dad who happens to be an asshole. That's not going to work. We have to know he's an asshole just by looking at him. Sounds good. What do we have here in storage? Okay, let me see. I've got a Prince William wig and some MC Hammer pants. Perfect. Let's shoot this. What the fuck? And then with the kids, this isn't just this episode. This is something that kept popping up in every episode we watched. There are a lot of skinny kids wearing extra, extra, extra large t-shirts tucked into their jeans.
Oh, I noticed that.
The director's like, love the print, Sheila, but does it hang past his elbows? No. Well, find another one. Keep looking.
I have it in my notes. Baggiest t-shirt ever?
Yeah. So there's like, so there's a lot of stuff where you just have to shrug and go, oh, 90s, you know, mullets and skater cuts and sideways ponytails and whatnot. But this seemed so strange to me. And then, like, just by chance, I was cleaning out a closet and I found some old photos in one of the boxes, and I'll be damned if 10-year-old Chris wasn't rocking the tucked-in jumbo shirt like Andy Carr Superstar.
Oh, no.
Of course.
This is hilarious to me because, like, a few years after this, you know, it became all about baggy jeans with chain wallets and like a plaid shirt tied around the waist. It's like we'd had a good run of looking ridiculous above the belt, and now we wanted to give the bottom half some time to shine. But yeah, that was Okay, so that's that. A very brief fashion corner. There's more from your guys' episodes, but I don't want to spoil any of that yet. So, all right, let's just run through the rest of this really quick. There's some more back and forth with the bully. Andy learns that his uncle was really rich, but no one knew where the money came from since he never left, you know, this house. And this is pre-internet, so it's not like he was playing online poker tournaments. Why is that the first thing my brain went to for making money online? It's not like he opened up a storefront on Etsy to sell his woodworking, okay? I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. So meanwhile, Andy figures out that music is what causes this door in the cellar to open. And here's something that I was a little disappointed by, because in my memory, the creepy radio would play even when it wasn't plugged in. And there was a specific old-timey song that would always come out of it, and that's what made the door open. So it was like a two-hander situation. You do that, and so I do this. Some nice teamwork going on. But no, I mean, it's anything. It's any piece of music, which I don't think is as creepy. So, like, you know, a boombox pumping out sensitive man rock will do the trick. And, like, you know, don't accidentally turn up the volume on the TV too loud, one commercial jingle, and the next thing you know, murder, fuck, death balls. I don't know. the secret weapon of the demon and the the root cellar. Those murder, fuck, death balls. Nickelodeon, pushing the envelope. Kudos. So, yeah, whatever's behind the door is trying to lure Andy inside it, and it keeps manifesting itself in different ways. And for me, oh my God, you guys, the thing that was still really scary, the doll.
The giant doll.
Holy shit.
What the fuck is that?
He turns around and this life-size doll is just standing there, and it starts talking to him. And by the way, one of the comments on YouTube under this clip was something like, "Yo, man, I'd have followed that doll and fucked the shit out of it." All that was missing was a racial slur, and you could just point to that and go, oh, there's the internet summed up right there. That's it.
Pretty much. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, that came on the screen, and I was like, oh, wow. And I remembered like, this moment when I was a kid, this was the moment where the show completely had me. One look at that doll, and I knew my ass was going to be planted on that couch every Saturday night. It also, oh boy, I shouldn't share this, but here we go. It also reminded me of, do you guys remember My Size Barbies?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I remember hearing about those things and thinking, that could be awesome for reasons I'm not going to repeat, but.
Wow.
Then the.
Wow.
Hold on. Okay, so then, like, you know, the daughter of this woman that babysat me after school got one, and I saw it, and it was not life-size. Do you guys remember this? They were actually like 2 feet tall, and I looked at this thing and I was like, I can't fuck that. I wish that was a joke.
My niece actually has like a life-size whatever Barbie, or had, because she wanted it really badly, so everyone got it for her, and then it basically watched her sleep. So, like, because it's standing there and it doesn't close its eyes or anything. So she was just like, can you turn its head around?
Well, that's not okay.
Like, what?
Like The Exorcist?
Like, we're like, why do you want it to turn its head around? And she's like, because it's watching me.
Whoa.
And I was like, that's the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
Oh my God.
But then flipping its head around, I mean, so we turned its head around and that didn't look right. So then we turned its whole body around, and then I had Blair Witch Project flashbacks. And I was like, oh God, no. We can't have this thing looking into a corner. No way.
This whole part might get cut out.
it will.
I don't want my mom to hear that I was 11. I was pushing my wiener against so many weird things. So basically,
this is the oldest we've been for something we've watched, right? Like, this is the only thing we've watched so far that we were all pubescent for.
I'm not sure. I think so.
Far,
I think. I think you're probably right.
So feelings are a little different
right?
this time around.
Donna is humpy humpy on Gary. I'm all about My Size Barbie. Donna's is less humiliating. Was not sure that was going to be possible when we started this episode.
He was cute.
So what ends up happening is that the bully destroys Andy's bike, and so as payback, Andy lures him into the basement. He just wants to scare him. and so that he'll leave him alone. But the bully gets eaten by whatever's down there, and not only that, there's a brand new bike waiting for him. And the voice tells him that he made a deal with the mom's uncle, and it's the same deal that he'll make with Andy. He'll give him whatever he wants. All he has to do is keep feeding him. And then the last thing you hear is Andy's sister come home and start yelling for him, and Andy flashes a Norman Bates grin, and the implication is, of course, that he's going to feed this thing his little sister. And that is a ballsy ending for a kid's show.
Yes, it is.
But then immediately Absolutely. We cut back to the Midnight Society, and someone's like, he didn't really feed it his sister, did he? And he's like, oh, no, he just scared her. And that totally felt like a network note. Like, like let's maybe not go out on that note. Let's make sure it's established that the sister's still alive.
Hey, how about the fact that the bully, when he gets locked down in the cellar, is repelled by loud metal music?
He hates it.
It's like he should feel right at home. That's the music he's totally playing all day long in his house.
That's his power up. That's his mushroom. He should grow twice that size and just punch through the floor.
He should be able to like headbutt the door to the cellar open.
This one took a strange turn, but okay, I guess. So, but yeah, what did you guys think of this episode?
I usually just wait for Donna to talk first, so.
You're both so polite, and it's fucking up the show.
I thought it was pretty good. I didn't understand why the punishment for the bully when he was in trouble with his parents was scrubbing steps. And he's doing it like three times. He's scrubbing the same spot on these cement steps.
Cement steps. Like,
they were cement steps.
Sorry.
What? But like, what about raking or mowing or,
many other chores.
Anything. There are so many things you have to do outside. Never once did I have to scrub cement steps.
That's for damn sure.
But overall, yeah, it did still have a few scary moments that I was
This episode was definitely one of the darkest that I can remember, and I definitely, this is one of the episodes I do remember of this show. I was like, oh, he needs to kill that bully. And then I was like, no, not really. Oh my God, he really killed that bully.
I thought,
I thought the thing was going to maybe mess him up, like break his leg or something like that. I did not.
I thought he lured him there to kill him at first. I thought that's what he was doing. And I was like, holy shit, our main character's a fucking cock. I'm not on board with this. And then when he comes back down and I'm realizing like, oh, he just wanted to scare this kid. He didn't know the bully was going to get eaten. And then I was like, okay, so, newbie mistake. now he knows. And then immediately it's like, but I will kill my sister. So moving on, Carlos, do you want to walk us through the episode that you chose?
Submitted for the approval of the Gary Fan Club, I chose the episode Super Specs.
The tale of the Super Specs.
Well, I chose the episode Super Specs.
I watched the wrong one.
Oh, dang.
Mine was much more specific. What yours could
Mine's
have been,
not a tale so much as it is a yarn.
I was going to say, we don't know.
We'll never know.
Okay.
Okay, so what am I doing now? I'm talking? Yeah, oh, boy, this is weird.
You're on a podcast and talking is weird.
I am not ready to talk.
On Carlos's final episode of Hey, Do You Remember?
He realizes he's been talking the whole time.
This is this goes out into the world, Carlos. I don't want to
No, it does
you,
not. We have literally tens of people.
That's true. That's don't overshoot it.
We have literally 10 people,
including us.
And me twice. I download everything twice. Anywho, the tale of the Super Specs.
There it is.
This episode was bookended by actually the rare episode that does not begin at the campfire. This starts in the magic shop.
Right.
Which actually ends up being the exact same magic shop from the tale itself. Because again, $12 budget.
Well, but also, I maybe sort of, you know, write what you know. He's telling a story and this is how, well, okay. Never mind. I'm trying, what am I making excuses? Let's be fair. Guys, come on.
Come on, let's be real.
There's a lot of reasons.
So the bookends involve the idea that, Gary is not, he's not bringing his A game anymore. He's not telling scary stories. Right. They're just not.
Shame on those kids.
They're just not hitting like they used to. Which, you know what? F those kids. He's the Professor X of that group. Mm-hmm. Whatever he says is scary is scary. Mm-hmm. But true. So we begin our tale, and it's a tale that he's designing to scare them. That's what he wants to do is to scare them, because that's the goal of every episode of this show.
That was like a new twist on Are You Afraid of the Dark?
But he's like, you know, he's bringing heat this time. He's really going to scare him. And also, one of our other Midnight Society members is just kind of suspiciously sick and not there this time around. That won't come back at all by the end of the episode.
Nope.
So we get our couple, the tale begins. We get our happy couple, and it's this goofball kid, and he can't control how much of a nerd he is for magic. He's a magic nerd, and he somehow found a girlfriend. And they're in this magic shop, and he's looking through all the stuff because it's April Fool's Day coming up, so he's got to stock up for April Fool's Day. Right. And he's like, you know, whatever, they're just, you know, they're silly pranks and, you know, it's all in good fun. Yet somehow, like in the next scene, he totally believes in the voodoo sand that he bought.
Right.
You know, the dirt, the bag of dirt that makes everything. It's definitely
sprinkling cocaine on everything.
he gets this spell book. He opens it and he reads the spell for second sight. And no one really knows what it is, but he sprays this dust all over the store, which I would have kicked him out for, but whatever. And it definitely affects these X-ray glasses. Mm. So, Mr. Sourdough, as I'm going to call him.
I believe it's Sardo, no Mr.
Emphasis on the dough.
Yeah, Mr. Sourdough.
Oh, my soul. My heart.
Mr. Mario Sourdough.
Well, now I'm back.
Runs the magic shop, and he sells these kids these X-ray glasses, and he's super creepy. And but the glasses are whatever. It's all in good fun until the girlfriend puts on her super specs, and she can see people who aren't there.
Oh, does somebody want to attempt to do the music that happens every time she puts on the glasses?
That's you. That's all you, bud.
That's wrong, but it's like, it's really, it's not, it's wrong. They made a wrong choice.
Yeah, she hears, like, dubstep, which wouldn't be invented for another 15 years. Yeah, you're right.
Ahead of its time.
It's a bizarre choice. Like, seriously, that music actually takes you out of it being, like, super creepy. Like, maybe even no music at all might have been, like, a better choice than that.
Mm.
Where was I? We get to the point here where this girl is now starting to see them. She comes home. And she sees a teapot.
This is a thing I wanted to talk about is like the frightening imagery of the glasses is she looks at the stove and oh my God, there's a teapot on the stove.
And it's steaming.
And then
and
she looks in the fireplace and she's like, oh my God. Well, I mean, it's contained. It's fine.
Right after that, she goes through this long thing where she walks down the hallway. And
the whole time,
I mean, you see the hallway through her super specs vision. And I mean, swear to God, that hallway, I mean, it took about 4 minutes to get down that hallway. He's like, are you serious? Can we just cut to the part where she gets to the end of the hallway? I understand. But she's at her home and she starts seeing more of them. Mm-hmm. So there's more of these shadow people.
Well, yeah, and it's previously freaking it was just like one, and this is the first time.
It was
time
always the same one.
Yes, and now we see that, like, oh shit, there's two more.
Right. So she runs to the basketball court, if I'm not mistaken. I might be getting the chronology wrong. She runs to the basketball court where her boyfriend is playing basketball, and he's the worst basketball player ever. And she puts on the glasses again, and she sees many of the shadow people playing basketball, which, I'm not going to lie, not creepy, and it kind of took me
out. I laughed out loud.
Yeah, I was like, are you serious?
I loved it.
And then, I will say that, you know, watching them play basketball was not creepy. When they all stop playing basketball, and then it's like seriously, like eight of them just start walking to her,
yeah.
That was creepy. So she runs to Mr. Sourdough, and
ouch.
He seems to be just totally surprised that anything was really magic, because, you know, it's not real. But he's, suddenly he can just make up an explanation for what's going on. He's like, you seem to be looking into, and he's like literally like looking for the next word, because he's totally BSing her.
Yeah.
An alternate dimension. And like how somehow his you know, his bullshit argument is totally spot on. She is looking into an alternate dimension. She can see people from an alternate dimension. So he makes her pay him $20 to go to the house and exercise the you know, close the window, as it were, to the alternate dimension. And he brings like a crystal ball, and he puts the magic powder on the crystal ball, which then puts them, I'm guessing, into the crystal ball, or like it puts them into the other dimension at first, and they're surrounded by shadow people, which, again, creepiest people ever. And they immediately like, okay, we have to get out of here, you know, blah blah blah, you gotta, you know, use the spell, do it again. And they use the spell to close the window, and what you get at the end is, you see, it looks like everything is okay at first,
right,
until you realize that there are different actors playing these roles. And then you're like, oh, this is like, these aren't the same people. What's going on? And then you see the woman, the person who was the first person who was a shadow person, ends up being this woman who is like a stronger wizard, I guess, than Mr. Sourdough. And she was able to put them in their place, which is in this crystal ball forever. And she's like, funny thing, they were trying to banish you while you were trying to banish them. Ha 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 ha, they're dead.
So yeah, I think this is a great ending, and it's a great concept for an episode. And then, so that retroactively, like, you know, the basketball thing is a little less silly, because you realize you're just seeing kids from another dimension.
Right.
That are, and then to them, you look like the shadow person.
Right. But somehow everyone in that dimension could see her, even though they weren't wearing super specs with magic cocaine.
Right. Right.
So I don't, maybe that's just something they can do in their dimension.
This episode is sort of how I feel about most Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes. Not just as an adult, but even as a kid. The way it's presented, I don't think is really scary at all, but the idea itself is, it's a great concept. And like, not just that, not just the concept, but like the entire plot, the reveal at the end, really good stuff. The only thing that really bothered me was the way whoever directed this chose to shoot these dark figures, because it's always in super bright 1-to-1 ratio lighting, where instead of looking like creepy shadow people, they're just kids wearing black leotards. Like, you can see the wrinkles, and sometimes you can see the faces behind the fabric. It's like the guy, whoever shot this, went out of his way to not make them too scary. Like, and then the basketball thing really hammers that home. And so that's my only real complaint, is that they could have made that stuff look so much creepier. And I think even as an adult, that would have been unnerving if it had been shot just a little darker and a little more, because the thing of like the shadow people phenomenon, that's a real thing. That's something that I even as an adult gives me the creeps, but we're just watching kids run around and
wait. Can you elaborate on the shadow people being a real thing?
You've never heard of this? Oh, Google shadow people as soon as we're done with this podcast.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a real phenomenon. And one of the theories about them is exactly what it is presented in this show, which is that you are seeing things in from another dimension in a particularly like thin spot where they're sort of bleeding over.
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. It's a really, really interesting thing to look into. But the other notable thing about this episode is that I'm pretty sure that this is the very first appearance of Sardo, who was a recurring character throughout the series, and this magic shop. And he would always do the same thing where he'd pretend to like, oh, I know what's going on. And then, you know, I'll charge you this much to fix it. Well, I've only got this much. Okay, that works. Like, this was sort of a recurring thing with him. And I think him and Dr. Vink was another guy who was in several episodes, and he's sort of going to come up later, sort of tangentially. But yeah, cool concept. I thought really not so awesome execution of the shadowy figures, some nice cocaine imagery, nice message, do cocaine, get superpowers. I'm on board with that, of course. Donna, what did you think of this one?
I think maybe I just didn't really get it. I mean, I did. At first, the shadow people were real scary. I didn't ever think of them as shadow people. I was like, what are those people dressed in?
Why are all these theater tech kids?
Exactly. Why did the like tech crew put hoods on their heads? Like, I don't really understand. And the playing basketball was like quite silly and
ridiculous.
That made me giggle.
I can totally see why this would scare you as a kid, though, Carlos. It's a very, very creepy idea.
Absolutely. Just, oh my God.
Donna, would you like to let us know which episode you have chosen?
I would. Submitted for the approval of my fucking awesome nerdy friends.
Which one?
Tale of the Quiet Librarian. Okay, so the episode is we see a few kids just kind of get lost in the first part, which again makes me wonder what's going on with the adults in this town, because you don't hear anything about where did the kids go. They're
yeah.
just gone.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a terrifying place to grow up, and watch out, kids. So there's about two kids that just go missing to start off the episode, and they just go silent, and then they're gone. So then we follow our main characters, Jace and Lori, who are working on a school project. So they have to go to the library in order to get proper notes and project-y things. And you see these poor kids, and this Lori is just terrible at teamwork, and she just puts Jace down all the time, I feel like. Meanwhile, he's just calling her an ice queen, which is very, yes, I suppose there are a lot of teenage hormones going on around there.
Was it problematic to call that teenage girl frigid, though? Like, she's like 13 years old.
Yeah.
So Jace and Lori are working on this project, and she says, Jace, go down to the basement and get me some books. Do something. And so
that's pretty accurate.
He goes down there.
Get me some books.
That's basically what happened.
I want some books.
Yeah. Plenty of sass. Okay, the part of Lori will now be played by Carlos.
I want some books. Jace the face.
So he goes down there and reveals one of my favorite parts. It's adorable. It's super cute. Football player kid has these gigantic glasses. And I was just, oh, that's adorable. I thought that was adorable. So he gets these books, but he hears like a crazy sound. And so he leaves the notebook in the basement, runs upstairs. He's so frazzled. He's still got his glasses on. He comes upstairs and she's like, what does she say, Carlos?
Where are my books and my notebooks?
She says about that. And she basically storms out of the library, unwilling to do any kind of teamwork. and doesn't realize that her notebook is not there. She's left the notebook, or Jace has left the notebook in the basement, and Lori and Jace have parted ways. She hates him forever. She's just going to write the book report without him. Until, of course, the day before the report is due, and she realizes the notebook is not there.
Oh.
So she disrupts football practice with some Ice Queen-y, sassy words like...
books.
Just one sassy word, I guess.
Yep, that's what she says.
This is a real one-note performance this girl gave. I mean, I don't want to be too hard on a kid, but...
It gets a little bit more in depth as okay. we go on. So, of course, they have to go back to the library to get the notebook so that she can exclude her partner and write the report all on her own. Well, they arrive back at the library at 7 o'clock to realize that, unfortunately, it has closed for the evening. She, at some point, I guess, convinces Jace that he should break into the library in order to go down and get her notebook back. Of course, he climbs up to a second floor window, tries to get in that way. The window is locked. They're discussing what to do when all of a sudden the window blows open.
Ooh.
Maybe I loosened it. Okay, so they're climbing back up. They're both going in now. So they go back in and it's totally different. Where's the copy machine? Where is the computers? And she drops her backpack. They go looking. They pick up an oil lamp. Like, where's the microfiche machine? It's not here. that was Jace. So they're downstairs now, and everything's, this isn't what it used to be like. This isn't what it used to be like yesterday. And then, of course, the door... Oh, right. Okay, so the door... I love telling stories.
What you don't know, though, is this is exactly how these kids told these stories. We just got the pleasure of seeing them acted out.
Did I say he was wearing... Hold on. Oh, we gotta go back.
No, it didn't happen yet. No, wait. Okay, so they're down there, and they see this room, this quiet reading room. And there's a key, and it's real old and scraggly, and Lori thinks, well, hey, I'm just gonna prove that I'm not a nice queen and walk into a death trap. So she opens the door, and inside this quiet reading room, you see, like, dozens of children from centuries past.
Oh my God.
With cobwebs on them. I thought they were dead.
Yes, I did
at
too.
First.
That was the creepiest shot.
Oh my God. That was so scary. Yeah, that was a scary moment. And we do see the two kids that have been missing since the beginning of the episode. Mm. And so they're freaked out and they're not making any sounds. I think Jace's voice is somehow gone all of a sudden. And then you see this terrifying old bespectacled woman with a big scary box.
Let's clarify that.
Wait. Oh.
She is holding a wooden box.
So she's holding this unit.
Oh my gosh, Donna, what is it with you? How do you do this?
Please next time say package. Please next time say package.
It's a contraption.
So the woman with the big box is holding a unit. Go ahead. There's kids involved. I can't wait to see how this pans out. This is a scary episode. I was on the edge of my damn seat. Where is this going?
You were on the edge of your Barbie
That's
doll.
Not cobwebs. They were covered in...
Oh, no. So, Jace loses his voice, and they run out. They're terrified of this woman because she's the quiet librarian, and so they run out and try to get away from her. They're running and trying to hide and maneuver throughout the library, hiding in the stacks, and Jace has this crazy sound-making machine, which is driving her absolutely nuts, of course. And they manage to do a thing where Lori's upstairs and Chase is downstairs and they're confusing her. And then they're both right by her and she steals Lori's voice. And then they get this big bust of a guy.
It would have been fine before if you...
if you hadn't gone, you bust.
That's what it is. It's a little half statue.
A little half statue.
And they knock her down, and they break her big nasty box into a thousand little pieces.
This, I thought, was by far, this is like the worst scene in this episode, because they needed to make it more clear why this particular plan worked, because every other time we see her steal sound, she opens her box. I'm reverting to the age I was when I watched this show. So, and then all she has to do is just aim it at whatever's making the noise. She opens it. God damn it. I could have gotten through this.
No, you couldn't have. That wasn't going to happen.
Nope.
Come here.
No, but so all she has to, but you know what I'm saying? It does. And it's not even like, it's just within the general area. It doesn't even have to be that specific. There's not like a range or whatever. So when they're using this noisemaker at the end, I mean, she's standing right in front of them. Why all of a sudden does this stop working where this thing, like, I know they're throwing it back and forth, but it's not even like they're moving too quick for her. Like, Jace just holds it and it keeps using it over and over and over. And it's like, no, she got you. Like, this is, you're done. This just didn't work. And then when,
I don't think the writers knew why that plan worked. Mm. Like, they're just like, yeah, this has to work because we're at 22 minutes.
Not a bad idea though. The idea is not what I have a problem with, just sort of the execution. But anyways, sorry, right. Donna, go ahead.
Sure. And then the spell is broken of the big nasty box and
the cobwebbed box.
And everything is pretty much fine. I was worried about where all the other street urchin kids went from 1910, but I'm assured by Lori and Jace they're somewhere better, they said. So
they died.
That's probably true.
They're dead.
They're dead. They died down there.
They're in
they
heaven.
They died down there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that is about the episode. And then they write the paper together. Mm.
Right.
She learns something about how to not be an ice queen and to share.
Well, what I really loved about this episode is that the librarian is supposed to be share. From... what the hell was that?
She's supposed to be Cher.
You heard that too, right? What in the world was that?
I didn't hear anything.
Yes, you did. That was you.
I cleared my throat, but I didn't do it near the microphone.
No.
The librarian was supposed to be Cher.
Wait, you guys both heard someone say Cher?
Shut up.
Yeah,
it was you.
No, I did not say Cher. I went, I did not say Cher.
A very nasty, scraggly voice went, Cher. Donna heard it too.
Yeah, I did. Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, we'll check
out. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Oh, no, that was me repeating that she learned how to share, but you must have gotten on a real wicked delay.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have, I was like, I didn't say share, what are you talking about?
So when you suggested this, I thought like, oh, I loved that episode just from the name alone. And then when it started, I realized I remembered almost none of it. And I started to wonder if I had actually ever seen this one or if maybe I was thinking about another episode that involved a library. But then there's that first shot of her, of the librarian, And it was like, oh, right. That was like the one shot, the only part of this I was familiar with. And it's probably going to show up in my nightmares tonight. Or maybe it'll take a sexy turn. Who's to say? All this talk of a box. The best way to face your fears is to fuck them, right? Isn't that what they say? My priest told me that. Is that?
Yeah.
So this was another really cool idea, a good setup and everything. It seemed like they spent way too much time setting everything up and getting the two main characters into the library alone at night, and then they only really had like 5 minutes to kind of establish who the librarian was and what, you know, have her chase after them. I thought it just, I didn't not like it. I just thought it would have been, it would have been cool to get them locked in there somehow right away and then have to spend most of the night sneaking around an old creepy library trying to evade this ghost and at the same time using stuff in the library to sort of piece together who she was.
Yeah, they never had to leave that library. They never had to leave that library in this episode.
All right, so are we ready to move on to the final episode?
Yes.
I feel ready.
Submitted for the approval of everybody who's really sick of hearing us do this, we picked The Tale of Laughing in the Dark. So were you guys thrown by the intro of this one? Not just that it starts with the story and not the Midnight Society, but the opening credits are different.
Yes, they are. That was the way early days. This is the second episode of the season ever?
Yeah, right. This was the second episode of the show. The show peaked with its second episode. That's pretty crazy. So did you guys see this one as kids, and what did you think of it?
I turned this business off.
Is this the first time you've seen the whole thing?
I was so scared. I think it was.
So you rob yourself of the resolution, and you just go to bed with, like, he's out there.
Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible system. I don't know why.
Well, no, to be fair, Are You Afraid of the Dark, 50% of the time, it didn't end happily. So you were kind of... You know, you're saying, he probably is still out there at the end of this episode.
Well, he is, but he's not mad anymore. I mean, that's important. You know, look, I don't have to worry about this guy if you know, I don't have his nose. True. So
if he's in a good mood, I guess. So.
Carlos, what did you think of this one as a kid?
I it's funny because when I actually thought this was the first episode because it's so iconic. Like this, I remember them like hitting the ground running. With this episode, but I guess it aired the next week.
Well, I remember that I heard people talking about this one for a long time before I saw it. And when I say a long time, I mean like probably a few months, because when you're a kid, that's a lifetime. But like, so for a while there, every Saturday night, I was rooting for this episode, like, please be Zeebo, please be Zeebo. And I saw a commercial for the show that had a split second shot of him. And I just instantly, I was like, that's what everybody's talking about. Holy crap. Mm-hmm. And that alone really, really scared me. So the night I finally saw this one was a really big night. I was so excited. And, but yeah, the intro is weird, and maybe they just haven't, they hadn't settled into a formula yet because this was so early on in the run, but. So we hear someone narrating, though, even though we haven't been introduced to the Midnight Society yet, and a theme park called Playland. And the big attraction there is this spook house, Laughing in the Dark. And the last room is a series of doors, and one of them leads to the exit, and behind another one is Zeebo the Clown. You don't want to pick that door. So now we cut to the Midnight Society, and one of the girls just nopes the fuck out. Like, oh, clowns, forget it. See you, nerds. But, they convince her to stay. Someone's like, okay, now start for real this time. What? Wait, you couldn't think of a better way of, like... So, that was pretty silly. But so anyway, now we meet our three main characters, and the main guy is Josh, and boy, is he a little stink butt.
He really is.
Excuse me, gentlemen, if I might interject for one moment. some of our more cultured listeners will certainly recognize Josh, played by Christian Tessier, as Lieutenant Duck from the wonderful series Battlestar Galactica.
Well, obviously he went on to bigger and better things, but in this episode, if a stomach flu fart could turn into a person, it would be him.
Wow.
And he's carry on.
I love Retainer Donna. She's the best Donna.
If we could go through this episode with Retainer Donna and you doing Lori from the previous episode, then that would be dynamite. So stomach flu fart is hanging out with this brother and sister duo, and the brother is Ouija. Did I hear that right?
Is his name actually Ouija?
Yeah. Ouija. And the sister is Kathy. Who cares? It doesn't matter. They're standing outside the spook house talking about how it's actually haunted and no one should ever go in there. And Josh isn't having any of this business. And then the owner shows up. And I mentioned earlier that Dr. Vink would sort of be coming up later. That's because this is the same actor. Obviously not playing Dr. Vink, playing the owner of Playland. And I guess if you wanted to, you could make a case that he's the one who's actually behind everything that happens, because other than the dummy in the spook house, we never see Zeebo. So I know that's a theory that's floating around out there, is that maybe it's this guy. So, the next day, the brother and sister show Josh all this research they've done about a clown named Zeebo who, back in 1924, stole the park's payroll, fled inside the original Laughing in the Dark, dropped a cigar, place went up in flames. A new spook house was built in the same spot. I keep saying spook house. This is not a word I used as a kid, so I feel very uncomfortable saying it. It's unusual. So the new Laughing in the Dark is built in the same spot, and now his ghost supposedly haunts the dummy modeled after him. Not a bad setup.
Not at all.
Josh chases the little sister out of the house with a tickle attack, just like straight up yelling, like, tickle, tickle, tickle. And this is how these writers thought kids behaved. Like, and what's even better is that once we get outside, we get the words Phoebs, Lameball, and Doofus in the span of about 10 seconds. That's how stomach flu fart talks. And so Ouija dares... Ouija dares SFF to go into the spook house and steal Zeebo's nose as proof to know that that he's gone all the way through. And he says no problemo, and that once no problemo. See, now I'm even talking. That's how that would have been not out of place in this episode.
is he Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle?
No problemo, lame ball.
No problemo, totally tubular, man.
So stomach fart decides that, like, if I get the nose, that Ouija, you have to wear it to school for a week. These are real stakes, you guys. So Josh makes his way through the spook house, and there's two things about what happened in here. Number one, when he sees what is presumably the real Zeebo, not the doll, like, reflected in the mirror, holy shit. Really creepy. True. Number two, the fire-breathing dragon. So here's your real problem. The place isn't haunted. This is what's killing kids. I think mystery solved. Josh gets to the last room, steals Zeebo's nose, runs out. The rest of the episode is Josh realizing that Zeebo has followed him home and wants his nose back. His parents have gone out for the night. And oh my God. So mom leaves him dinner and a big bowl of pudding. And the way he... I'm not alone in this, right? He fingers the pudding.
Alone. Oh.
I was upset that the parents put the spaghetti in the freezer.
Right?
They hate this kid.
Terrible.
We left dinner for you. Him. Spaghetti's in the freezer. Pudding's in the fridge. It's like, oh, so we've established you do have a fridge. Why isn't the spaghetti in the fridge? He's got to thaw out this spaghetti now.
Well, his problems are about to get a lot worse. Because. So he hears somebody. Because so he hears somebody in the house. But it's no problemo. Because he's got a hockey stick. And when he thinks he's, like, going to confront somebody with this hockey stick, does he yell, "You're going to get beaned"?
I thought he said beat. You're gonna get beat.
It's way more likely that he's
you might be right, but you understand that that also would not have been out of place in this episode.
What did you think he said? Beaned?
Beaned. B-E-A-N-E-D.
Beaned? What is that?
That's mean? I don't know. That's why I thought, like, Canada.
It's Canadian for beat.
Like, right, yeah.
Beaned.
You're gonna get beaned, lame ball. So, okay, so look, oh, yeah, most of this is pretty stupid. Like, you know, the spaghetti turning into a plate of cigars is, it's like, when did he have time to light all these and swap them out and whatever? But some of it is pretty effective. Like, he gets that phone call from Zeebo saying, give it back.
That was
share, is what Zeebo says. And then he runs up to his room and calls Ouija and asks if he just prank called him, pretending to be Zeebo. And then someone else picks up. And Josh thinks it's the sister and yells for her to get off. And then Ouija says something pretty silly. He says, we don't have a second phone. I mean, I know it's 1990, but you don't need to be the Rockefellers to have two phones in your house. But the implication is that... Did I miss something?
It's a joke that just got funnier the more we thought about it.
Oh, well. So... But the implication is that whoever is listening in on the call, it's on Josh's end. That really scared me as a kid, just that whole idea that Zeebo is somewhere else in the house listening in. And so Josh, like, just fucking jumps off his roof, runs back to the spook house, returns the nose, even leaves a box of cigars to make nice. Who would sell him those, by the way?
Right.
And then everything goes back to normal. So Donna, your first time seeing the episode start to finish, what did you think of Laughing in the Dark?
Oh my gosh. I was a little, you know, I mean, the hype is pretty big for Laughing in the Dark. Pretty big. So, I mean, I am over 30 and I wasn't like scared most of the time. There were a few moments that the phone call was a little why is he right outside your door? And then why are you going to run away? He's like, give it back and I won't be mad. So just like open the door.
Yeah, just
and
fucking
give it, back.
Give it back. Yeah.
Could have just stayed in his room and been like, here you go. Sorry, man. Kind of a flu fart.
If that had been his final line, I would not have a single bad thing to say about this episode. I'm sorry, man. I'm kind of a flu fart. You get it.
There you go.
Carlos, what did you think of this one?
I remember the clown looking way creepier than it did. So that kind of threw me off. I definitely, though, remembered how much of a douchebag the main kid was. I did not like him then, and I kind of hoped the clown would do bad things to him. And I definitely did not remember the just like totally wrapped up happy ending. I definitely did not remember that, like, and the clown was fine. The end. I did not remember that. This episode was way more threatening to me when I was a kid. But I think pretty much every episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark has its like really great moments, like the stuff that's like really inspired, like filmmaking, for lack of a better term. And the stuff in the house when like the balloon comes through the door it's inflated and it says give it back, that is genuinely creepy. And everything on the phone is creepy. And the guy who runs the spook house is also, he's creepy, like, you know. And some of it is just the fact that he's got like this, he's a creepy looking dude with a southern accent, so it's just kind of creepier. But yeah, this episode hit like pretty, you know, it hit some pretty high highs, but the cast again was like not great.
No.
And one of the kids' names was Ouija.
For Christ's sake, yeah. I mean, I totally get why this is one of, like, if not the most popular episode. I get that. I think there are better episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark, but Zeebo himself, just that imagery, I think is probably, I can see why it's the most memorable thing from the series. And I can see why it terrified me as a kid. And it's pretty cool that you only see Zeebo two or three times and he never even does anything. It's just the dummy in the spook house. And everything in the house is almost scarier because you never see him. It's we're on flu fart the entire time, and you're just kind of imagining what Zeebo's doing on the other side of the door. Yeah, as an adult, this was really silly, but clearly this is not for me. I think that even with all of the dated elements, if you were to show this to a 10-year-old now, it would still scare the shit out of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
I think the only thing that's really missing is a final scene where we see that Josh isn't such a jerk anymore. I mean, not apologizing to Zeebo, but maybe going back to the brother and sister and being like, hey, sorry I was such a fucking flu fart, but that's a minor nitpick. So this episode sort of sums up how I feel about the show. It has not aged well, but it's still a lot of fun. It brought back a lot of great memories, and more than anything we've looked at so far, it's almost impossible to be too critical of it because we are just so not the target demographic anymore. But a lot of these would still work for kids today, and that's pretty cool.
Definitely.
Okay, so I guess that's it. I guess that wraps up our Are You Afraid of the Dark discussion. I do think we should – I will probably – revisit more of these at some point, either next October or who knows. So we'll just consider this volume one. We're going to have some more Halloween-themed content coming for the rest of the month, so stay tuned for that. Subscribe on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, like our Facebook page. Let us know if you have any suggestions for other movies or TV shows we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.